Session number 16724, Ernest Taylor, Reel 3.
Mr. Taylor, Reel 3. Did you get leave from Devon?
Yes, and believe it or not, I remember that well, because at the time the trains were, you know, you pushed into sidings, or other trains were put into sidings, and I remember just, I think one time to get home from Devon up to here, so you had to come by a Bristol way and then right across to this central and up again. It took 15 hours for to get home, you know, and if you just like a weekend at the time, and then they were long, you know, 15 hours it just takes.
So the travelling time came out of your leave entitlement. How did your family receive you coming home?
It was great, really. It was, the thing is, it was great for us to get home, you know. You'd been homesick. I mean, we were homesick to start with, but we hadn't got properly used to it. And coming home, oh, it was grand. But naturally, he used to come home, and there was always a lot of fuss and all that, and then they went out for a drink, and that was it, because I'd just started drinking before I went in the army, and used to enjoy a drink, right? And I used to got a good welcome from different, you know, my own family was there, but my father used to come meet us at the station, and these others, especially the last leave, these people in the next street to where I lived, they had the banner out, welcome home, and that, you know, across the street for us. And, but Honiton itself, that was another place. I enjoyed being in Honiton for all. It was rough, like, with the marches and all that, but there was a homely atmosphere. It was in, we didn't get to anybody's house or anything like that, but in the pubs at night, and that, they're all nice people, huh? As I say, that's how I come to get this photo, they don't realise.
Were you?
It was only like a main street, you know, Honiton, running through.
What were you billeted in Honiton? So
in Honiton, was in, a builder's, it had been a builder's yard, and behind the main street, and being taken over by us. And I remember there was Honiton was one main street right through. And on either side, there was arches through and back out into the country again, or out into these lanes behind. And there was a public house on the end of one arch in the main street. And we used to come through that way and just through the back over the road and we had our billets. And that was this. And the last time I was down, I visited, and it was actually still there, the building that we were billeted in. Where that photo was taken was just actually behind it. It was like a school. It looked like a school. It had been a school, I think, but it was being a builder's as well afterwards. But anyway, that's, we used it.
What were you sleeping on?
Now then. It wasn't bunks then, no. We had been earlier on bunks, you know, double bunks. But I think it was just like these low beds again, like at Spennymoor. I think with something similar to that. You used to have to set your kit out, you know.
How many men would there be to a room?
If I remember right, it was just what we were in. It was one big room. There was a lot in, but I can't mind through another. But there wasn't another company with us, but there was more than our company in it, and there was they were in a separate lot. But I don't remember a great lot that way.
And you had regular kit inspections at this
time? Uh-huh, yeah. And
what happened if your kit was short? Or someone had stolen it, or you lost it?
You used to have to replace myself, I think, but I can't think, because I was so strict, we'd learned that much about, you know, these crafty boys, what they do, this and that, so...
Was there much stealing amongst you?
No. Don't think so. And as the same applies with the bullying, I don't think there's any... Not that I did. I didn't find it. Unless, I mean, I wasn't maybe right in amongst a whole lot of them, but we all had our little companies, you know. And we used to go out together. There's one together. There's one that I was proud of. But he's still Tizzick's. They call it Tizzick. Lives at Sunderland. And he'd been one of the Dunkirk lot. I used to work with him, you know, him and two or three lads. Made it up together. But it was good at Honiton. And we used to go to, there's a cinema down the bottom. We used to go there.
Was the accommodation warm? It was a rather severe winter.
It wasn't so bad in the, I would imagine, I think it'd be pipes or something in because it was a beamish building, but I can't remember saying it was cold, but unless we were toughened up like.
Where did you
watch? That's it. We were, now that I come to, I can remember now, we were in bunks. That's right. Remember McNuddy and all them in bunks when they used to speak from each other, that was it. Uh-huh. And there was the ablutions you could use. I think that's because it was a builder's yard, but I think there'd been a school and that was the result. So.
And were the ablutions outside?
No.
Were they inside the building?
No, there's places where it would be, the were like, was really bad, cold, but I don't think, there it was.
What duties were you performing outside of manoeuvring and so forth? Did you have
duties? We used to have guard duty, you know, because the headquarters, just further up the lane, there was the headquarters. The company headquarters, and we used to take turns in our guard duty. And
how was that arranged? How was a guard formed?
It was change over just as you would do, you know. And it was 24-hour guard, but it was just on this headquarter, the entrance to the headquarters, that's all.
Was it a...
Because I can remember one day there was this Tizzick came to me, I'd borrowed his gas mask and he wanted to go and leave and he had to take it off on guard to give him it and borrow one from somebody else because you had to have your gas mask with you when you went on leave, you know.
Was it a high standard of turnout for you, guard? Were you inspected?
Yes, yes. Well, I think that's where we learned it, you know, from what I remember of the drill.
Yeah, you were doing a lot of relearning when you got there. You had very little before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you were more that way. Because this place, we used to do a lot outside, you know, and drilling and things like that. But I'm trying to think, was that, that was at Honiton. But I can't remember a lot. You see, these that integrated with us, they're all trained soldiers. So we weren't doing a lot of training. I mean, we'd already trained roads in place, Abbotsbury in place like that. And then we went these, so we with schemes, you know, the manoeuvres and that.
Had you fired any other weapon than the gun, than the rifle?
Well, as I say, on the range, we trained on the range. I don't know where now, but we did two or three range. And anti-tank rifle.
The boys
anti-tank rifle.
What was that like as a weapon?
That was a button that it used to knock your back. It had a bullet about that big. And when you fired it, you had to make sure you just went with it. Let it shove your back. Otherwise, it could have brought you, surely, you know. But I don't think it lasted long, that. Because eventually, later on, I was on two pounders. Now, that's where I was away from the infantry again. But anti-tank rifle, I don't know whether it turned out to be much. You never see anything of them later on, you know. I tell you what, I was at one time, I was and I didn't even fire it, but I got, I got presented with this rifle grenade bomber. It was an ordinary rifle with a cup on top. And the trigger mechanism was made with like a pin, and you're supposed to be fired and detonated. It went up and exploded, but I didn't. That was rifle bomber, but I didn't really fire it. And I don't know how long that lasted. I never seem to say that anymore. I think they're all filling things.
Did you get to learn about the Bren?
The Bren gun, yes. Stripping the Bren down and things. Stripping it down, quickness, you know, and things like that, playing it. And we used the brain.
Did you like the brain?
Well, I didn't mind the brain, but I didn't use a lot. You were allocated to it, you know. We used it on the range. I was never a brain gunner, like, in charge of one.
In a company, how was it made up?
Oh, now then. Well, the sections. I can't really.
You'd have so many platoons, presumably.
Yes, that's right.
And then the platoon would have so many sections.
Sections. I think it was. I'm not sure. It was three sections.
Within a section, were you all riflemen?
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, you had your mortars, you see. But I don't know whether it's a mortar section or not. No, the mortar bombers.
When any other, did you have a semi-automatic weapon of any kind, a rifle or?
Just a rifle, not automatic.
Just a 303?
303, yeah.
Did you like the 303?
Oh, yeah, uh-huh. I mean, I think it just seemed to get attached to your rifle and that was it, you know. Later on, well, even later on, but you still, prior I was in the anti-tank section, you still had your rifle, you know.
How much emphasis was put on training with the bayonet?
The bayonet? No, you tore it, but naturally you've seen them with the bags and things like that. But it came later on, we were in, I mean, just talking about the bayonet for now. The best test we got was in Iraq. We went pig sticking in Iraq, and actually, I came across a ball, and I decided it was a bit near. I just saw its lugs clapping like that, and so we had one up the spout already, and I shot it. And I was actually the only one in the battalion, and I was marched back with the ball. I was in front of them carrying the ball, strung, you know. Headquarter company had supposedly got a great big one, but we got no later on. They bought it from a Bedouin. So that's beside the point. That's getting off the point. But that's because we're supposed to use your bayonet as pig sticking. But
did you have a lot of bayonet training in those early days?
Just not a great lot, really. You know, just in out from the dummy, like you've seen, and that's it. But and the same applied with grenades, hand grenades. Throwing them, you know. We didn't. We threw them a few times, but we didn't actually get much of where they were live and exploded.
It was basically just dummies that we.
You just had to come. Well, you had to come so many seconds, and then with the pin out and then throw it. Yeah, with the pin out and then throw it. I think it was a lot. Threw them straight away. But.
Was there any accidents that you saw whilst you were there?
Yeah. Well, I heard of one that happened. I heard of it. I don't know what there was in. I'm not sure whether it was in Cyprus or Iraq. But anyway, there'd been a escape maneuver, and I think a mortar bomb had hit a tree and exploded. I don't know if it killed or injured somebody. But the next one, I'm reluctant to talk about this one, but I'm going to. Talking of, this was in Iraq, the rifle grenade bomber. Well, I told you I was designated that. Came the time, I was always, every time I went anywhere, it mustn't agree with me, I was always, as I said before, when I came from Algiers, boils and abscesses were all over. This particular time in Iraq, I went sick. Went sick, I didn't know what was happening, where they were going, thing, but there was a scheme on. And this fella, Johnny McGibbon, a Liverpudlian, was put in my place on the rifle bomber. Now, they went on a scheme somewhere. As I said, I'd never fired it before. He fired it and exploded. It didn't go right. It killed him. But that's one of the tragedies, because when I did get back, I mean, I felt badly about it, because Nazi, they say, always really scare me, you know, it's going on sick and put. Well, it was nothing to do with that at all. It was just I'd gone on sick. I didn't. I'd say I would have tried it, I suppose, but it could happen to me. And he died. He's in the book. Anyway, what happened though? There was one of the fellas. I thought there should be pally with him talking right from Honiton and all up through. And he brought it up one day at a distance. He said, "Get away! If it hadn't been for you, he would have still been here." He brought it up, and it upset me. I didn't do anything about it, but it's always been in my mind that. But for that, I would have been gone. And but that was one of my main tragedies. I think that he was a big, fit fellow.
It could have happened to anyone.
Yeah,
could in any situation.
But it seemed to me I had to be gore sick at that particular time, and it just looked that way. Still, I thought. I mean, it's. I mentioned it. I couldn't care. I know I've got no guilt about it at all. But
When did you prepare to leave Honiton to go to the Middle East?
I believe it's about. I think it was around about February. I'm not sure, but it's stuck in me. It's in my mind about February. And from there,
had there been any signs that you were going before you actually were told? Was any?
Well, we got our overseas kit. You see, we got tropical kit, and that was a bit of a hilarious deal. That trying your tropical kit on, because there was some funny shape among us, and one little fella from Berkeley. I know they called him Mick, and he was so skinny, you know. And when he came, the tropical trousers, they were half mast, what we used to get, you know, and these little skinny legs. And they used to call him Mick the Miller. Well, that was after a greyhound, you know, the Mick Miller, the type. And little things like that. I mean, I know what I would look like in mine, but the cutters of some of them, when they came out with their gear on them, you had to put them all into a special overseas kit bag. When you went abroad, that kit bag went on the boat.
Were you paraded with the kit on?
Yes.
This was supposed to be a secret, but the people around the area must
have seen about it. Yeah, they would know where we were going. And I remember they had the blue flashes on the khaki shirts as well. You know, we didn't get the hangout coat jackets until later on, but they tucked in. But the trousers, they went to there, and then they turned up to there.
To your knees. Yeah,
well, and the button to the side. And then the thick stockings up to there. And not your putties. I think we had putties on there with the socks. But going abroad, and that's when, of course, this picture would be taken.
What do you recall of the actual move itself? Did the people see you off?
Well, I don't know. We marched off, and I can't remember. I can't honestly remember about it. I can't remember actually whether we went down to the train at Honiton or whether we went by transport. I can't. We maybe ended up at, because we used to go now and again down to the barracks in Devon, which was the Devon's, battalion, the Devon's regiment that we used, headquarters, Spike Milligan and all these doctors up there. Maybe we went there, but I just can't remember leaving.
You can't remember the very cold conditions at the time when.
No, I don't. I think it's put out of your mind with.
Actually, it would be later than that. I think you're actually left about May.
Was it? That's right. I was just guessing.
So you went up to Glasgow by train.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I can't remember. I went with Glasgow by train and to Greenock and sailed from Gourock, wasn't it? That was it. But another thing I can't remember. It seemed a long time, but I can't remember how long it took us to get around, get abroad, you know, because we had to come right round, you know, went round the top of Scotland.
Do you remember the boat itself?
Or yes, the Duchess of Richmond.
What was the conditions like?
Well, we were lying on decks, on the even the holds where they cover up decks all the way down, and it was like a small canteen. We used to go and But we, when we were going abroad, we they had us doing PT and all sorts all the time, kept us going. You know, I mean, you weren't just lazing about all the time. But
you didn't have duties on the ship, did you?
No, I don't think so. Not that I can think of at present.
Was it, as you got into the hotter climates, what were the conditions like then?
There was an Indian division, is it Indian company or division, joined us part of the time on the, I don't know whether it was when we got to Durban or what, but it was part, I think it was an Indian div, and we were sort of integrated with them, we got to know them and that, but I can't think how long it was it took, but it seemed a long time to get abroad.
Do you remember calling in at Durban?
Yeah, well, we called in at Durban, if I remember rightly, you know. Calling in Durban, and I think we're going to get, we're told, three nights' sleep, three nights, you see. Well, I learned later on, like, that evidently there'd been some miners deserted and got good jobs in the mines over there. We were told we were going to have three nights. Well, at the end of the second night, we just didn't get off, so that sort of food and anything happening like that. If that's, I'm saying that's this is what I remember. And at the end of the second night, we didn't go. But mind, the 2 days were off hours, really. But there was cars picked you up at the dockside and that took us way through the reservation, you know. The lady took us right through everything into the middle of the sort of jungle with roads there, like. And great big coffee, give us a meal, give us, you know, coffee and things like that, and brought us back, about 4 of us. Right. And that was for about 2 days, and it should have been 3, or 3, should have been 4. I think it was 2 and 3.
Do you remember the escort that you had?
The Exeter was one. And I think the Argosy was Argosy for a while. There was the Exeter, and there was two of them to leave us to, I don't know whether it was the Bismarck or the Graf Spee or something like that. They were in the battle for that when it was sing. So
the escort left you?
Escort, yeah, that leave us, I think it was the Exeter and the Achilles or the Exeter that had to leave us for that. And we used to be on deck at time. We could have a look around, but most of the time I remember, I think it must have been too much for everybody to go on deck, you know. So spent a lot of time down there playing games, gambling, things like that, because there's nothing much you could do. But, mind, they give us physical training and things like that, you know. We had to keep us going. And there's duties you would have to, suppose, clean up, tidying up, washing up and things like that, but they don't stop in your mind. I mean, the things that...
What was the food like on the ship? Was it better than what you'd been used to on shore?
No, I couldn't tell you. It couldn't have been bad otherwise, you know, I would have remembered. It wasn't. You know,
have you any of the memories of leaving Durban and going up the Red Sea and towards Egypt itself?
Yeah, I used to always be on the lookout for something, and I used to be looking over, and you always see the flying fish in front of you, flying fish, and looking out for different ones. But I think we were kept, when we were really at any bad stage, we were kept downstairs. I don't think of any.
Do you remember?
Oh, there was a box. There was a boxing deal on. There was Joe Mahone. He was organising the boxing, and I always remember he says to me, he says, "Oh, felt like you, man, long arms like that." And I says, "Oh, no, but I think at the finish he found out that it wasn't for me, and that was it." But they had a boxing ring on top of one
boxing
of the holds.
Competition.
Aye.
It was a long journey.
Yeah. I still kind of think how long. It was weeks, like, you know.
And no problems. The boredom didn't cause any problems. There was any problems with discipline or...
No, I don't think. This Hen Whiteford, as I'm saying about, I don't know what he's on there now, the police, the RP, he was in our group and he used to, he's always on with this Mick Miller and carrying on with them shouting, and I think we used to take notice of him a lot, you know, and he wasn't a, he wasn't even in RP then, I don't think, but he was stickler, you know, for keeping that, he was the boss, you know, and he wasn't an SEO, but I think it was just his, in our lot, and there wasn't, there was just phone dashing about and all that, you know, but apart from that.
When you got to Egypt, do you recall what happened?
I went to El Kosassan transit camp.
What was your first impressions of Egypt?
Well, it was the first impressions, I think, was the boom boys for a start. Up to, you know, the boats coming. Well, we came across them first. We called into Freetown, you know, and we were there for a day, but we weren't allowed ashore because it was Sierra Leone, there was a lot of disease and that, we weren't allowed ashore. But these, the bomb boats used to come over, you know, and throw, if you had throw money down, they would send stuff up to you, you know, fruit and things like that, if you had the money. And the same happened when you got to Egypt, they were always the beggars and that there, you know, and the shoe shiners and whatnot, and shoe shiners, if you didn't pay them properly, they'll just do one show or something like that, or put a bit of paint on, or threaten you with lemon razor blades and things like that. Little boys, you know, no worse than they are today up here. But I used to enjoy my meals, mind. If I went, we used to get a lead from, forget where we were, every now and again, down into Alexandria. We weren't far from Alexandria.
Come to that later. So you weren't long in Egypt before you went out to Cyprus, were you?
To Cyprus, that's right, yeah.
Before we leave, El Kassassin, the big camp that you went to, mm-hmm. What was it like?
It was massive. It was all flat, hard desert, you know, and marquees. And I met a fella, a character belongs to Sunderland, Rennie. I thought it was amazing to see him, you know. Well, I'd never seen him since he was a proper spiv down the town. And next time I saw him, he must have been a regular in the army, and I saw him there. But it was a massive camp, El Kosassan.
What were you
and
doing?
And we used to go to the Sweetwater Canal and places like that, you know, where we were. I know we were in marquees and a bit of drilling and things like that, but I don't think there's any other much purpose for it, you know. It would be maybe just waiting for the. To go up, and then we went to see. We went.
Was your health affected, or at this early stage in the new country?
No, I don't think so. I'll tell you what we did have: dysentery, sandfly, things like that. And I used to have. From the tent, I forget where it was exactly, which this particular place, but from the marquee to the toilet. You get up the next morning, there was a trench dug just for people walking backwards and forwards, you know, 30 times a night, some of them, they were just backwards and forwards at the time. But, I don't know whether it was inoculations or anything, you seemed to get over it. I mean, no, things like that affect me, you know. No, you don't know whether it was through that, no. Little different things.
You arrived in Egypt.
I mean, whether my health, I was always bronchial, but chesty and stomach, I'd got a stomach ulcer. But I will.
You arrived in Egypt round about the July, and you weren't. You were only there a few days. Then you went on to Cyprus. Do you
to
Cyprus.
That's right. The journey? Well, you say no. That and you were there. I didn't know how long we were there. As you said, then went to Cyprus. That's right, to Cyprus.
And how did you travel from Egypt to Cyprus?
To Cyprus, by boat, but where was we going? I can't think where I went. I think it was somewhere, not Lebanon, was it? I thought it was somewhere further up. But anyway, we went over, and I know that we landed at Limassol. And
what was Cyprus like?
From Augusta was this. So, okay, really, Cyprus, it wasn't bad. But we were digging, defences there then, and we had miners, ex-miners with us, used windy picks and drills and things like that, and we all got into that. So, of course, it was rocky. We built the defences around the air, around Nicosia Airport, places like that, you know, we were digging trenches and things like that. And we We used to have a siesta, though, because it was so, you know, a heavy job. And on the afternoon, we had a siesta till about 6 at night, then we'd start again.
How did you get on with the Cypriots?
Cypriots? Not bad. And there were a mixture then, the Turks and Cypriots, you see. And they, the same ones, they were labouring to when we were digging trenches and that. They used to come around with the horses and carts and the hairs all, you know, all rags and that on their heads. And the same ones that you'd work with, sitting up with some olives and they'd be talking and some bread. The same ones, I got to know one. Go down to town, Nicosia, or wherever, Nicosia, and the same fellow would come along with some of us, really dapper and dressed up. But he was just like an urchin, a beggar, when he was at work, you say, but different altogether with all the rags up, you know, and he was dressed.